floor is yours.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me to give my talk again this year. I'm going to be talking about using the CSD to give an overview of synchrotron data used for small molecule crystallography. And I've also added some slides on raw data availability in the CSD, because small molecule community is starting to discuss about how we share data and how when we should be sharing data. There was a really good satellite meeting a couple of days ago organized by Simon Coles and Amy Sargent, which I think some people at this meeting were there too. So in small molecule, we are starting to take or continuing to take raw data seriously and looking at what we can do to share that. So you probably all know that the CSD is a database of small molecule organic and metal organic crystal structures. Every entry is enriched and annotated by experts, and we're aiming to take every published structure. So data that's appearing in papers, data that comes to the CSD without an accompanying publication to be deposited directly in the CSD as a CSD communication, as well as data in patents, university repositories, and theses. Just recently, we reached our latest milestone, which was 1.1 million structures. And the 1.1 million structure was identified as a CSD communication that had been measured by Bill Clegg at Newcastle. But the structure I'm showing on this slide is one of the earliest synchrotron structures that we've got in the CSD, which is Indigo-03 is a CSD ref code. And one more thing to mention is the CSD is a trusted core trust deal repository. So data can be deposited to CCDC through an online web deposition platform or via email. Pre-SIF, the entries were created by typing data from tables and papers. But now, as you can see on this graph, almost all data comes to us in SIF format. When a SIF is not available, the CCDC will manually create a SIF from accessible information and that, you know, data that's available in papers, but only a very small number of structures every year are structures that we have to type up and create SIFs for. The Joint Web Deposition Service, there's a lot of different stages there that you can really help depositors to provide the best information to the CSD. We really encourage depositors to deposit their data pre-publication, because it allows them to check their data and enhance it if possible. We've got a number of different stages to help them doing that, including we do checks for syntax, we check for structure factors. There's also a validation stage where you can do a check SIF report, and there's also the ability to respond to that check SIF report, and those responses will be directly embedded into the SIF upon deposition. And we've also got our enhanced data stage, where you can provide additional information about things like property data or any other experimental information that you might have missed, such as how the crystal was grown, what solvents were used, if any. We've also got workflows with a number of different publishers to assist with identifying publication details. And this allows us to help publishers get access to the data for peer review using our secure reviewer service. And I think that's pretty much all I was going to say about the web deposition service. So the main difference between synchrotron data for MX versus small molecule is the proportion of structures that are actually collected with synchrotron data. This graph shows data I got from BioSync, which is showing about 80% of structures being collected at synchrotrons, whereas I think in the past 5 years, it's more like 90% of MX structures in the PDB are collected at synchrotrons. However, for CSD, that's vastly different. So about 1.4% of structures over the whole history of the CSD were collected at synchrotrons. This percentage is slightly bigger when you just look at structures in the last 10 years. That's about 2.5%. But what this might mean is using synchrotrons to drive forward the gold standard might not work in the same way for small molecule crystallography as home lab sources are really sufficient for the vast majority of data. So we're probably going to need more buy-in from instrument manufacturers, and this may in turn require user demand for them to comply, depending on how willing they are in the first place. Though the amount of synchrotron data is small in the CSD, the numbers of synchrotron structures are increasing every year, pretty much. In the last 2 years, we've had over 1,800 structures being measured at synchrotrons. And how we identify synchrotron data in the CSD is we flag it with the phrase synchrotron. And you can search for that using an alt text search in our desktop search software called Conquest. Synchrotron structures are identified during the data curation process, and that's either automatically by our curation software, which checks a number of SIF fields, or they can be manually labeled by the editor if the editor notices that they were collected at the synchrotron and there's not information in the requisite fields. However, for our automatic processes to work, we really do need the SIF information to be complete and correct. So looking at the completeness of some SIF fields, and these are SIF fields that I check as part of a project to help and ensure that we're not missing any additional synchrotron data, you can see that there is a difference in the reporting or within the SIF of some fields. So some fields like wavelength and the radiation type, they're pretty much in every single SIF that's in the CSD, whereas other fields like the diffraction detector type, although it's starting to increase, there's only about 20% of structures have this field in the SIF with information in it. And we can also see maybe more worryingly is the diffraction source fields are starting to become less well reported. So this is both the diffraction radiation source and the diffraction source field, because we are still seeing, although one of these has been depreciated in the course of dictionary, we are still seeing information in this field regularly. But even looking in both of those fields, over 30% of those structure of SIFs don't have any information in this field. And that is really one of the fields that we do check with synchrotron information. So that if this trend continues, it might start making it harder for us to find synchrotron structures. And of course, just because there is information in the field doesn't mean it's correct. So this trend is, we're seeing less of it now, but what we used to see a lot was in the measurement device and measurement device type fields. This in the course of dictionary should be the goniometer information, but more often it was actually being recorded. They were actually recording the detector information in that field, but now we're seeing the increase in people using the detector type fields too. That trend is starting to reverse, and we are starting to see goniometer more regularly in the measurement field and the detector in those dedicated detector type fields. Looking at the kind of computational information, this might indicate something about information being lost during experiments. These fields are seeing what programs were used to process data at different stages. And you can really see a difference of the percentage of SIFs that don't contain this information versus where they are in the collection process. So the refinement software is normally the software that's being used to create the SIF. And so most of those SIFs will have information in the what program was used in the refinement field. However, stages earlier on in the process, such as what software was used to collect the data, that is starting to become less and less well reported. So that may be another worrying trend that we need to look at within the community to see why this information is starting to be less well recorded. Because as you all said in these meetings, that all this information is really, really important for how we share data and how we know what was done to that data throughout the whole process. So some outcomes of looking at SIF completeness, some structures, as you can probably guess, weren't identifiable as synchrotron structures from the SIF information. We've done some projects with Stephanie Boer at Australian Synchrotron, as well as STFC, looking at data measured at Diamond and ISIS, cross-referencing information that they have on their records with publications they know contain synchrotron structures, using our CSD Python API to look for structures related to those publications in our paper and seeing why some things don't match up. Obviously, some of these structures we're not going to have anyway because they're MX or they're in the ICSD instead. But this is helping us find some additional synchrotron structures, and vice versa, we're helping them find publications with structures measured at their facilities that they didn't know about either. And we've also talked to a couple of facilities about SIF templates and highlighting information that we are checking to find synchrotron data, and helping them just know where to be putting information and what information is really important. And again, as I hinted at earlier, we are seeing some inconsistencies in SIFs. So SIFs where the radiation type is given a cyclotron, but the diffraction source is given as a steel tube or a rotating anode, which may be very much less likely to be the case. So there might be some issues with templates being used and information that would be that was correct being lost in favor of information that's in kind of stored templates, because, as I said before, synchrotron data is a lot less used for small molecule. Another project we did was looking at the wavelengths structures were being measured at and trying to identify additional synchrotron structures through those methods. So this is a graph of structures that had a non-standard wavelength but weren't labeled as any kind of non-standard technique. Lab X-ray sources, as you'll all know, will have just there's only a couple of X-ray radiation wavelengths out there. So we collected together all those that weren't within those known ranges and assessed them to see whether they were measured at synchrotrons or not. One thing we did see was the really, really small wavelengths. They were actually, we found a load of electron structures that we didn't have labeled. So that was really good, really exciting. And comparing it to wavelengths of synchrotron structures as a whole, these are known synchrotron structures. You can see, yeah, there's a big range of wavelengths, but this method isn't without its problems, because some synchrotrons do collect on wavelengths that are like a molybdenum wavelength. So we couldn't use this method to find all the structures that haven't been labeled properly. Another difference between synchrotron, single crystal and MX is that until very, very recently, there wasn't SIF fields dedicated to providing the facility and the beamline that the synchrotron studies were measured at. We now have these fields in the IUCR CoreSIF development repository. So what I was doing instead was looking at the fields I was looking at to assess whether or not something was a synchrotron and seeing if whether I could also identify what facility that was measured at, kind of looking at names, acronyms, or specific beamline information that were given in these fields. And what we found was we've identified studies from 30 individual synchrotrons from all around the world, and 69% of studies, synchrotron studies that we could identify from SIF information, we could also attribute them to a particular facility. The percentage of known versus unknown facility is kind of holding steady. In recent years, it's more like 25% unknown, but there's still a way to go before we know where every single synchrotron structure was measured. And some of the things we can do with this information is we can, as I said before, help facilities to find structures that they didn't know about that have been published from using data from their facilities. This is some information from structures measured at the synchrotron radiation source, which is Darsbury. You can see the increase in structures to about 2008 mirrors the uptake in the SIF format that you might have seen in the very one of the very early graphs in the presentation, and then a drop off after the facility closed. But we still are getting SIFs that were measured at Darsbury deposited to the CCDC every year. Just to mention briefly about Fact and Fair small molecule data, the curation at databases, we've got a role to play by curating these structures so that we can do them in a consistent way so that they are the data is findable within the CSD. We also store information about the structure factors if that's been deposited to us, and or any checksif reports. You can, as I said before, you can do a checksif report as part of your deposition, but you can also, I think, upload any checksif report that you have previously done, and that is available for download in Access Structures. We also give all structures in the CSD a data DOI. This is a DOI link to the structure in Access Structures, and that can be used to help with citing that specific data set. A quick look at the structure information, factor type information we do have, which is another difference as the CSD doesn't explicitly require the deposition of structure factors, unlike the PDB, though we really do highly recommend it. And if users don't provide structure factor information during deposition, whether that be in CSD. For our web deposition, we use HKLs and FCFs interchangeably as structure factor information. So as long as you provide one, but if you don't provide any, we require users to provide a reason why this information isn't available to continue on with the deposition process. We've accepted the deposition of structure factors since 2011, and in SIFs, the reflection information can either be included within the SIF or it can be uploaded as a separate file. And this is a graph showing entries with available reflection data by year. And you can see, probably not surprising, is that it really starts to take off with the reflection intensities, which is actually the HKL information from about 2014, when changes in software were made to put the HKL information within the SIF as a default setting. In 2020, we've had this data is incomplete. It just covers January to October, but we've had just over 90% of structures had some form of reflection data, whether that's structure factor or HKL. I did look at the reasons why people haven't been depositing this data. The biggest commonality I saw was that they were using software pre-2014, which weren't putting the HKL information in as standard, or they were from structures that the CCDC had manually typed up. We also have a project every year, that the hard copy project, where we can work with researchers who have a load of data that they don't have SIFs for, and try and type that information up too, so that information isn't being lost to science. But for most of those structures, there isn't any accompanying structure factor information that can be stored and shared. Looking at the difference between information being included in the SIF versus being uploaded as separate files, most of the HKL information is found within SIFs, whereas most of the structure factor data is provided separately. That not all, as far as I'm aware, not all processing software will include the structure factors in the SIF automatically, but I do know there are some processing softwares that do put structure factors in as well as HKLs. So this kind of graph shows the kind of difference between making it really, really easy to share this information by putting in the SIF for HKL versus getting structure factor information mainly as separate files. That is, as you all know, is required for a lot of journals. So it's kind of the publisher requirements driving, maybe that's driving that forward, versus the ease of providing that information is driving us getting a lot of HKL information. And I've got the last couple of slides now. I'm going to talk a little bit about raw diffraction data. So currently CCDC don't store raw diffraction data for entries, but what we can do is if that data has been stored in a separate archive and there is a DOI link to the structure in that archive, we can store that raw data DOI. And the raw data DOI will be associated with the entry in actual structures. As you can see on the slide there for CSD BizGo, the raw data DOI is available and stored there as a click-through link. You can provide the raw data DOIs during deposition in the enhanced data step, or you can also provide raw data DOIs for your structures after deposition using our My Structure service, and there's the option there to give the DOI link afterwards. And I've just got some graphs now about the percentage of structures that we have a raw data DOI for. So as of July 2021, that's 65 structures, which is 0.005% of the CSD, so it's a really small number. But one of the kind of interesting things to know is what data we have raw data DOIs for. So you can see there over half of the structures that we have those raw data DOIs for are from more non-standard collections. That, as you saw in our previous, that graph of what data we normally get, we're getting a lot more electron and neutron, and then we've also got some synchrotron X-ray structures that have raw data DOIs. And this might mean there's more drivers in those fields to share that data, whether it's more easy or the community is more demanding of it, perhaps in electron. That's a really rapidly developing field. There's a lot of methods development going. Perhaps they are more likely to share that data because we have currently 137 electron structures in the CSD, and 22 of them have a raw data DOI, so that's like 16%, which is a really could be seen as a really high percentage. I'm going the wrong way there. We've also got some raw data DOIs in access structures that are for non-CSD structures, and these are all structures that are in the ICSD. You can see ICSD structures also in access structures, and they also have a similar mix of electron, neutron, synchrotron X-ray, and X-ray data that's similar to what we have for the CSD. Looking at where this data is stored, about half of that is in Zenodo, followed by RepoD. The one thing to mention about the RepoD structures is that 14 of those 15 structures are from one paper. Almost all the neutron data is in the ISIS Neutron and Muon Source Data Journal. That has a that provides a DOI link to structures measured at ISIS. So maybe that makes it a lot easier for these neutron studies to be stored, to provide the raw data DOI to us. And there's also some data in a number of different university research data repositories. Looking at the publications, if you look on the outer ring of that graph, each section is then related to the number of structures in a particular publication. So the bigger the section, the more structures that are in that publication. And you can see that probably most of the data types are dominated by one or two papers. In X-ray, a third of structures came from one paper, and that was the paper that the structure that wins in RepoD. But we do see multiple different publications for each different segment, and electron and X-ray have 8 separate publications in which the data has also got a raw data DOI. Looking at the number of DOIs we're getting per year, it really does vary per year, but last year in 2020, and we got more raw data DOIs than all the other years combined. A couple of issues in my last few minutes. We check this information by hand. So more often than not, people are actually giving us a paper DOI rather than a raw data DOI. We don't check the files, we don't download them or process them to see if it's the right data, but we kind of do look at the file size to make sure it is at least big enough to be an electron diffraction structure. We have looked for additional raw data in other repositories, and I do know there's more out there. So that's going to be my job in a couple of weeks to look again to mop up any additional raw data that is out there that we can link to. But it does require structure people, when they deposit that data, to provide enough metadata so that we can link back to it, rather like a CCD number or a publication DOI. And some archives like Zenodo do store DOI links to publications or data like the CCDC data DOI. And last slide here, we are trying to promote people to provide raw data. So we've got some Top Tip Tuesdays on Twitter, and two of the more recent Top Tip Tuesdays were about sharing raw data, where it is in the CSD, and also how to deposit it. We highlight raw data DOIs in our trainings, like our self-guided workshop on structure deposition. We've also got FAQs on our website, and we do try to emphasize raw data in blogs and presentations where appropriate. And with that, I'd like to thank you all for listening. And thank you to everyone who I've talked about synchrotron data over the years. There's quite a lot of people there. And some of these people are people in the audience. So thanks.
Thank you. Very nicely done. Are there questions, people? John Halliwell, you have a question. You should ask it. You should unmute and ask.
Natalie, thanks ever so much for the talk. And I enjoyed it a second time, which is a tribute to the speaker, and the first time. The RepoD, the 14 out of 15 is one paper. Which paper was it? And RepoD, that's the Polish repository, is it?
I don't know it offhand, but I have the files on my computer. I will send you a private message in a second about what it is. It was like a pressure and temperature study of one compound. So it was like one compound they'd measured lots of different times, but I could get you the DOI once I finish my other questions.
Yeah, and basically the point I'm making really is to do with the enthusiasm maybe of one PI what for the others listening, what we learned from the structural chemistry workshop spread over 2 days that Natalie referred to was the general sort of feeling that where there are unexplained features in the diffraction pattern, sublattices, continuum diffraction, and so on, which are then not taken forward to derive coordinates, they would be the principal reason for preserving the raw data. But there are also, for the want of a better word, enthusiasts out there who are saying that all small molecule crystal structures should be associated with the raw data. And so it's just interesting to identify who in particular are the enthusiasts for that comprehensive approach. And of course, if they were to win the day, then the impact on the likes of Zenodo and so on, as Graham Winter said, it would be noticed at Zenodo of this strong community activity. So it's a pretty important point, really, just to identify, as I call them, enthusiasts for the broader approach within chemical crystallography. Thank you.
There definitely are some enthusiasts. There are some names that I've seen a couple of times, but there are, it's not all those structures aren't just one group. I don't think they're on one group anyway. There's lots of different author names, but there are a couple that I see. I've done it for a couple of their different publications.
Great, thank you very much.
Do we have any more questions? Okay, well, let's thank our speaker.
Yeah,
again.
I've got a...
Oh, Oscar has a question, okay.
Yes, more like a question actually, or follow-up to John's mentioning. When you say that it would be noticed at Zenodo, is that a good thing or is it a bad thing?
I think Graham's point, Clemens, was, or to which I took the hint anyway, I don't know whether it was all of it, but was cost. There may be, Zenodo is free. The anticipation is that it will be absorbed into the European Open Science Cloud, which is funded by the EU. It's largely preoccupied with governance discussions at the moment, as far as I can tell. And so the practicalities are left with Zenodo. But Zenodo and CERN in particular is very receptive. So when I was at the International Data Week in Denver in 2016, I was in the session where one of the coordinating committee people was there, John Wood from UK. I said that the 5 gigabyte limit at Zenodo for a deposit was restricting, particularly for time resolved studies. And within a week, they'd increased it to 50 gigabytes. So there really is a very strong willingness to collaborate with communities, as it were. I think Graham's point is that naturally that there might just be a limit that, or at least the initiation of a discussion that would kick in.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Clemens?
So I've asked my question, so.
Okay, fine.
That's fine, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. So Natalie, if you take down your share.
Oscar, did you have a question? Sorry, if you've got time for it.
Yeah, it's just sort of, just being impressed with the amount of work for fixing incorrect annotations in this. Like, how much is just hard manual labor, and how effective are your different tools for parsing data in this, and figuring out these different user errors from depositions?
So we do a bit with the Python API, and we're looking at the SIF fields. But when we're checking that, a lot of that is just checking it manually and seeing. And verifying why our software didn't pick it up and whatever reason that is. So yeah, a lot of it is some manual work.
Oh, wow, thanks.